Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DePorto, and we are back!
You know, I think I'm just going to let you do the whole show by yourself. That's the kind of treatment I'm going to get here. The Sci-Fi Christian, you know, I'll just let you do this solo. You can do my voice and yours.
You can do my voice and I can do yours.
I could do Colin later on.
Oh my gosh.
You play me, I'll play Colin, and Colin can call in and do you.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
That would be amazing.
Oh my gosh, Ben, it's been a while since we recorded. Almost 10 days.
A week and a half.
Or has it been 10 days?
Well, let's see. Saturday, Sunday, plus 7, 10 days.
Yep. So yeah, the last you heard from us, we were winning at our sci-fi feud.
Victorious.
Victorious, as usual.
How does it feel to be a champion, Matt?
You know, Ben, it feels good, really good.
I think it feels great.
I just want to bask in the glory, and that's why I actually went on vacation after the sci-fi feud.
Yeah,
no, that's not true.
No, but we have spent a lot of time basking in the glory of our victory.
I know. It was nice also for Scott and Miles on the Sci-Fi Diner to actually admit defeat.
Did they?
You didn't listen?
Nope. Oh. Well, I was here when we recorded it, so...
Yeah, that's true, that's true.
What would have been the point of me listening? If I was going to re-listen to it, I would listen to the Sci-Fi Christian, of course, Matt.
Oh, interesting. I actually listened to both, so there it is.
Oh, so you heard it once when we were recording
it. Yep, and I listened to it two additional times.
Oh my
gosh,
so you have great... You're probably better prepared to judge the victory...
I'm an avid listener of all sci-fi podcasts.
Oh, wow.
It's my...
I know, I'm just impressed that you listened to the same conversation three times.
I like to hear
in
how...
In three different mediums.
It was actually edited differently, though. I mean, they didn't edit anything out, but we started it earlier because of how it went last week.
Yeah, we ambushed them because they were late.
Yeah, so it was fun.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yes.
But if you want to know why it's been so long, blame Scott and Miles because they felt the need to feud with us, which required us to record on a different day than usual. So it's their fault.
All right.
Matt, we have some interesting show news we need to talk about here
yes.
at the beginning.
Let's do it immediately.
Let's do it so right
They probably already
now.
Know if they're looking at their iPods or their computers.
They might, though. Do you think people actually pay attention to our logo?
I think so. I look at our logo all the time.
They might not because I don't know if I've changed the logo on iTunes yet. That reminds me I still have to do
okay.
that.
So what we're talking about is our mascot, our logo.
Yeah, the wonderful and incredible Brandon Gibbs has once again loaned us his skills and designed a new mascot for us because we don't want to get sued by Lucasfilm.
That's correct. So if you've seen any of our older logos, it had not exactly Admiral Akbar. Just his,
but pretty close.
It was his likeness.
Yeah.
It was like the Imago Dei.
Yeah. And for a while, you and I had talked about this, Matt, and we were kind of like, well, you know, it's not exactly like Akbar, and it would be really cool to get a cease and desist letter from George Lucas, and we would frame that and display it proudly here in our studio.
But our donations aren't going so well, and we couldn't actually pay for any legal fees.
Well, I wasn't so much worried about it. I don't think we'd actually get sued. I think we'd get a cease and desist. What pushed me over the edge in saying let's change it was Brandon made the point that we're using this logo all over the place. And so the amount of work to change it now, as opposed to a year from now, is way, way different. So it's better just to do it now, and I was able to update pretty much everything in an afternoon.
Yeah. Wow, I just realized our videos we can't update, though.
Yeah, that's the one part. Don't tell George.
Oh, my gosh. So, anyways.
Yeah, the videos. If you're desperate to see the old logo, you can go out there. But... Yeah, don't tell George, everyone. This is just between us.
So, anyways.
And George, if you're listening, we would love to have you on the show.
Yeah, we could do a great interview with
you. I will be nice to you.
The Sci-Fi Christian.
Yes.
So, mascot, let's talk about it.
Okay, so it's a really cool alien-looking guy, and he's got a blaster. And Brandon...
Not a blaster. No, not...
He has a blaster.
Not like a Star Wars blaster.
Not a Star Wars... Just a generic sci-fi blaster. A ray gun.
He's got a ray gun.
It shoots rays. It blasts rays.
Yes.
And it's a ray blaster, everyone.
It's a ray gun.
And he might be in a similar pose to Han Solo, but probably not. He's, he's...
It's a generic...
Just a generic pose.
Generic standing pose with a gun that's...
He's completely original, and he's awesome. Well, I guess not completely original because he's kind of modeled after the typical, you know, gray alien.
What if we get sued by Mars?
Oh my gosh.
That would be the worst.
Brandon, we need a new logo.
Yeah. So we have a mascot.
And Brandon came up with this great idea to have a naming competition.
A naming competition?
Yeah.
And so we are right now letting people comment on this picture that we have on our website
at thescifichristian.com.
And when are we going to announce it? Did we say next week?
It says right here, next week. And we've got some really good entries so far, actually.
Awesome. And so, and then what our plan is, like we talked about off air, that if we hate all of the ideas they have, we can just make up our own, right?
That's true.
All right. Perfect.
Now, Joy had commented on this post and asked, what's probably a fair question. She said, so what do you win?
I don't think they win anything.
I don't think they win anything.
They win bragging rights.
This is the sort of contest that doesn't have a prize.
No, the prize is you've named our mascot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty big deal.
That's a huge deal.
It actually really is.
Matt, have you looked at any of these comments yet?
Yep, I saw one person named it Theo after theology.
Yeah, so this is Doug in Atlanta, who we'll hear from later on in the show.
Good.
He had a good call in this week. Doug suggested Theo, and he says, as in theology at warp speed.
I like that.
I love that.
Yep.
Honestly, guys, you know, Theo's going to be tough to beat.
Ooh.
In my mind.
We probably shouldn't tell which ones we like because we want to, you know.
Okay, no commentary on the rest of these.
Let's just give the names.
But Doug, but that was good, awesome.
Nice job,
and
Doug.
You're probably going to win.
What if somebody does ology?
Oh,
just to get the other end.
But like Theo's an actual name, so that's why it works so well.
It's true.
Okay. Bernard, suggested by Sarah, who is the wife of one of our writers, Max Pfeffer.
Oh, good. So, Bernard, as in from both Watchmen and Lost.
Yeah. He was in Watchmen?
Yeah. There's no Bernard in Watchmen. The newspaper guy. The guy that gives out the newspapers.
Oh, I don't think that...
Or no,
is...
wait, no. I think maybe Bernard is the kid that always goes to the newspaper stand.
No, not a very memorable character.
They were really important. They're in like every issue.
I know. Those parts were kind of boring.
You know what? They both had the name Bernard. Google it really quick.
No, I'm not going to Google it.
I'm pretty sure they were
we'll
both Bernard.
Later.
Maybe Bernie.
Actually, I'm not going to look it up. I'm going to let everyone write in and tell you you're wrong.
Oh,
that's
I hate
more
when that
reason.
Happens.
Because okay. Rather than just one person writing in, everyone has to do it, right? Yeah. Like when you said Torchwood wasn't part of Doctor Who.
That
they
was
got
the
like
worst.
27 billion emails
I've never
about
had
it.
So many. No one's ever responded to anything I said so much as what I got
never
something
gotten
wrong.
As much listener feedback as we did when Matt said Torchwood wasn't a part of Doctor Who.
So for the record, I know Torchwood is connected to Doctor Who.
But feel free to send Matt at thescifichristian.com another email about that because I'm
you,
sure
Brad.
He'd love to get your feedback.
What else do we have on that list?
We have listener Brad suggested Therion, a combination of Theory and Tyrion.
Ooh.
From Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones
accent. Kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Palindrome suggested Bob.
Palindrome. And actually, Bob is a palindrome.
It is.
So do you think that was part of his plan?
I think so, because he said it's a perfect name.
He or she. We don't actually know.
We don't know. Did you know that I was intrigued by the word palindrome, and I was looking up the origins of it today, and one of our Greek vocabulary words, pollen, which means...
All?
No.
Dang it. Wait, no, don't tell me. Again. It's again.
So, again. And then the other one is one we haven't had, but it means, like, direction. So, it means, again, direction or something like that. So, it means
both directions.
Again. So, yes. Little Greek vocabulary in action here.
Wow. So, it really works. We're learning languages.
Yeah. It's not only useful for studying the Bible, but also for understanding our fans.
Ben, I'd like to publicly congratulate you on your great job you did in Greek.
And you as well, Matt.
Well, thank you. We just finished
Greek 1. Greek 2 starts this week.
Yep. And so Ben, who is awesome at it, so if you need any help with Greek, write at ben@thescifichristian.com. You got an A. A+, was it?
It was a 98.6 was the
upper,
final grade.
Upper level A. Nice work.
And you got an A as well.
Oh, a little lower level A with a little...
I wasn't going to out you on that.
A-. So,
yeah, still better than
nice job,
all
Ben.
The grades below that. So
that's
well
true.
Done.
Thank you.
And
how does this have anything to do with our podcast? What,
well, we got off on a little Greek tangent. Now we're busy patting ourselves on the back for how good we did in Greek. But we deserve it. It was
it's
tough class.
It's been really tough.
Yeah, lots of work.
So 5 more weeks ahead of us.
Yeah. All right.
So the episodes are going to get better in 5 weeks.
Yeah. So if they've been a little rough.
Now you know why.
Yeah. The other thing we need to talk about is that, and he doesn't know this for sure yet, but we are going to take Joshua up on his offer to do a read along with us.
We haven't selected a book, right?
Told him I would email him in 2 days, like 10 days ago, and then two things happened.
Yes.
Greek final last week.
Mm-hmm.
And Dance with Dragons showed up. So, Joshua, I am sorry, but I will be emailing you probably by the time you are listening to this about the read-along.
Public apology.
Yeah, public apology.
The Greek read-along?
The Greek read-along.
So, we don't know what book we're doing, but Joshua is heading up our next read-along, and we're going to have a shorter book, a shorter schedule. We'll actually participate more actively and publicly.
Yeah, so we'll be talking to Joshua over the next week. So watch the website, thescifichristian.com, for more info on the read-along, which will be coming in the next week or so.
Ben, speaking of the scifichristian.com, I finally posted my first review.
Of Transformers 3.
Yeah, horrible. Don't see it.
And you called me on Friday, and were desperately rushing to post this.
Yes, because I realized, okay, when Harry Potter comes out, Transformers Transformers is going to become obsolete, and I need to get this review up. And so there it
is. Yeah, I think I said to you, you've got like 2 hours of relevance left.
Yeah.
So by the time everyone's listening to this, no one will care. No. And your feelings on the movie, Matt, because I did not see it.
I think I gave it 2 out of 5 or 1 out of 5. Maybe it deserves both for different reasons.
Wait, it deserves both?
I think I gave it a 2, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
It was not good.
And you have seen all 3 Transformers movies, so compare it to the other two.
You know what? I actually wrote about this in the review, but I believe that I'm getting... I have higher expectations for movies now than I did previously.
Yeah.
And so I think my thought processes are changing and what I'm looking for in a movie is changing.
Oh.
And so...
I'll congratulate myself on that one.
I would say that I liked this the least, but I don't think it's a worse movie. I think it's probably an equally bad movie.
So you think if you were to go back and watch the other two, you would now enjoy them considerably less?
I would say that's possible because I saw one. I rented it right when it first came out to rent, and that's the only time I've seen it. I saw 2 at the theater, and that's the only time I've seen it. So it's possible I would like it less, or it's possible I wouldn't care at all.
Yeah. Maybe because you've already seen them.
I can't imagine watching them again.
Oh, I can't imagine watching them. Period.
Ben, so do we have anything else we want to talk about before we get to the Stanley quote of the week?
I think it's time for the Stanley quote of the week.
Bing. It's the Stanley quote of the week. Bing.
Matt, I'm going to call you out here. You had a job this week that you did not do.
I was supposed to find the clip of sound.
Yes.
And I will find said sound clip by next week. Yeah, so
instead we have a Twitter quote.
Sorry, everybody.
It's actually, we're not making fun of Stan this week because he said something nice about all of his fans. So I want to read, though I can make fun of him a little bit because it's spread out over like 10 tweets.
Okay.
Which is, you know, his modus operandi. So part one of the Stanley quote of the week. Let's talk about fans. I don't mean the kind that blow cold air on you. I mean, the kind that make the work you do seem so very worthwhile. Part 2. A few people I know hate signing autographs and hate being asked to pose for pics by a fan. Well, here's how I feel about it. Little cliffhanger there.
Ooh.
Part 3. Ain't nothing easier than signing your name. I don't know if that's entirely accurate, but I like the sentiment.
Yeah, me too.
And ain't nothing more flattering than a fan wanting a photo with you. Part 4.
Let's remember that next 4. Year at San Diego.
Definitely. We should bring this along.
Print this.
Print it.
Okay.
Okay, I'm printing it. Printed. We'll save it till next year.
And I can sign that.
Yes, that would be awesome. A fan, this is part 4 now. A fan is one who appreciates your work. Without fans, most entertainers would be nowhere. Fans are the heart of showbiz. Part 5. And don't kid yourself, Bunky.
What? Got a little crazy there.
He had to throw out a little bit of weirdness. Yeah. It's not just actors and rock stars. If you've anything to do with creating comics, you're in showbiz.
He's talking to somebody specifically, it sounds like.
Maybe.
He must have heard some story about some jerk writer.
Named Bunky.
Bunky, yep, apparently.
I don't think that's anyone's actual name.
Okay.
And part...
Bunky.
Final part.
That's going to be my submittal for the mascot name.
I like Theo better, yeah.
What about Bunky?
Nope. You lose, and writers can't enter.
I can't win.
You can't, well, but what would be the point of entering since there's no actual prize?
I can't win prizes. I can't enter contests.
Brandon set up rules. Go to the Facebook page for our writers.
Don't we own this podcast? Dang it. All right.
I suppose we can override Brandon if you really want to enter Bunky. You won't win, though.
All right.
The final part. So here's to the fans. All of us in entertainment owe you a hell of a lot. Far more than money. I'm talking respect. Excelsior.
Very good.
That was fun.
Thanks, Stanley.
Nice comment and a little weird, but no more than you'd expect.
It's the Stanley quote of the week.
Bing!
All right. Well, let's get to it. It's time.
It is.
It's time for sci-fi news.
A little different cadence this week, Matt.
Yeah, I actually was actually bouncing up and down as I said it.
It was disturbing,
yep,
but
fascinating.
It worked out okay. Yeah, I don't know if fascinating is quite the word I would use. Could you not bounce anymore?
Well, I'm not doing it right now.
I know. I just mean like as a general rule
Oh,
in our friendship.
Sure.
All right, Matt, where do you want to start? Well, lots of great news this
week. I've got all my news on one side except for One Piece, so I'm going to
You spent like 20 minutes typing before the show. Were you doing?
I spent 5 minutes typing my top fives for the show.
Oh, should we talk about what our topic is going to be?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Go for it.
Top five.
Okay, so here's the thing. We've been talking about Lord of the Rings since you're apparently not going to say anything but top five. My gosh. Yeah. Why are you even here?
Go ahead. Just get to it.
I'm being a bit mean. So we've been doing a lot with Lord of the Rings lately, and people seem to be really responding to it. We got a great thing from Brady.
So we're going
to
strike while the iron is hot.
You got it. We got another great thing from Doug on Lord of the Rings.
So people want some Lord of the Rings action right now.
They do. And we had especially been talking a lot about how Sam and Frodo are kind of messianic characters.
Oh, yeah. We had that great call last week from Brady.
That's what I just said.
I know, but I'm just reiterating. Okay. Yes, good job.
And how together they kind of each make up a half of the messianic characteristics. And so we're going to talk about the top five messianic qualities or moments for both Sam and Frodo.
Did we talk about on the show how kind of like Jesus is half man and half God?
Brady brought that up.
Okay, that's what I thought.
That was his point. Don't steal it.
Okay, no, not steal it. But it's a great point because I just thought of it again.
It was. Oh, maybe we should play Brady's call.
But that'd be 2 weeks in a row. That might be weird.
Okay. Maybe we won't do it.
Okay.
We'll think about it, but probably not do it.
Maybe we should play it again. Do you have it handy?
I don't have it handy.
All right, sorry, Brady. But go back and listen last week. Good call.
Yeah, listen to listener feedback, and you can hear what we're talking about. It was a really good call, and it will set the tone for this week. It's kind of like the prequel.
Let me start with this piece of news, because it's on this side of the piece of paper.
Okay, I thought you typed all this out.
I typed out the top fives, the news. News isn't type-worthy. Harry Lennix, who we both like from Dollhouse.
Yeah, but Boyd Langton on Dollhouse.
He also had a key role in Matrix sequels.
You know, I had forgotten about that, but then once I saw this piece of news, I remembered him in the Matrix. I didn't like him as much in the Matrix sequels.
He wasn't bad. He was meant to be kind of like
he was grouchy.
A grouchy, you know, cranky guy.
So. I think the reason I didn't like him as much is because that stupid kid was running around with him like the entire time.
No, you're thinking of somebody else.
No. I'm thinking of, I know exactly who he is. In the Matrix sequels,
he is.
He was leading the defense.
Nairobi's wife or husband.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, husband, weird. And he was kind of like the anti-Morpheus. That's why, as viewers, we don't like him because we like Morpheus.
Yeah, but you remember that annoying kid who was like, Neow!
Yeah, but he was with the other guy who was like the leader of the trainers of the robots.
Yeah. Wasn't this guy the resistance leader?
Yeah, but there's two. You're thinking of somebody else.
I'm pretty sure he was with the annoying kid.
Google it. I'm about to call in my review of Matrix Revolution.
Did you just watch it?
I'm going to watch it.
Wait, who are you calling it into?
Sci-Fi Diner.
Why are you doing a review for them?
They're doing the rewatch.
Do a review for us.
Sorry, guys. I told Sci-Fi Diner I'd call in.
Turn cloak.
Cloak? Turn? That's right. We talked about this.
Yeah, we've had this discussion.
All right. So anyways, end of story. Harry Lennix is in The Man of Steel. Do you know what character he's playing?
He is playing a high-ranking general.
By the name of?
I don't know.
General Swanwick.
Is this an actual character from the comics?
I've never heard of him, but he might exist.
Okay. Yeah, we don't care about Superman that much, but it makes me more excited for the movie. He's a great actor.
Yeah, I like him. All right, your turn, Ben.
Yeah, okay. No Murrow, who I have no clue what he... Oh, he did a movie called Smart People that was really, really boring. No Murrow is going to be directing the 300 sequel prequel thing, which I believe is Battle of... Artemis or something like that. This just goes to our point we made last time on the show that the title's way too long and convoluted, so you can't remember it. Mm-hmm. So this does not make me excited.
Should we start some sort of petition to get it to be called 301?
No, that would be stupid.
It would be more memorable, though.
What would be the point of calling it 301?
Add a guy, and then that makes
sense.
Have
you seen 300?
I haven't.
Okay. I'm not even going to comment on this then because I don't want to spoil anything.
You can't find one more guy to make an easy sequel?
No. You need to watch the movie and then you'll realize just how dumb your comment just was.
But, I mean, fine. If any of the 300 died in the battle, which is likely, then
it's possible that some of them might have died.
Couldn't they find 301 new guys?
That would be so dumb. Why in the world would they want to just have 301 guys?
A sequel.
You do realize this is actually based on history.
Yeah. I know. It's history. But whatever. This is a sequel.
The worst idea for a sequel ever.
Is a sequel based on history?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, then that will do it.
Okay, I'm not excited about Noam Muro directing the 300 sequel, but I would be less excited about a sequel called 301.
Speaking of sequels, Ben, I saw a movie on Friday night.
Harry Potter?
Yep, Deathly Hallows Part 2. Ben, did you know that this movie had the single best opening day ever?
With yeah.
$92.1 million.
Lots of money. What did you think of the movie, Matt?
I loved it.
No, you have not read any of the books.
I have not.
So this was completely new
to you. No, I read the first book and half of the second book.
Oh.
So, but I haven't read this.
That's farther than you get in most books.
Yeah, so.
Well done.
$92.1 million. It's worth it. It was awesome. I highly recommend it. 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. Mm-hmm. I have, I'm not really in a rush to see it because I've read the books.
Yeah.
And like, I like the movies a lot, but I don't necessarily love them, so I haven't really been in a huge rush to go see it, but I will definitely see it. Great series, and cool to see it finally come to its conclusion.
I loved Half-Blood Prince. I liked part one of Deathly Hallows, but I actually watched it right before I saw the second movie. Like, in fact, I finished it about an hour before I left for the movie.
Oh,
and it's
good thinking.
It's awesome as one long movie the way it's meant to be.
Yeah, so better to see them back to back.
Back to back. Well, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was one book, so
that makes sense. Yeah.
Do you think that it was a good thing that they split them in half?
I do, because it
gave them more time.
Time to tell the whole story instead of trying to cut things out like they've done at a lot of the other movies. In fact, I think if they would have had this idea earlier, they would have been doing this all along and keeping other plot points in the movie that they cut out.
That wouldn't have worked. The kids would have gotten too old.
Yeah, you're right.
So.
But since you've read the books, you could probably... I've heard of different plot points that seemed key to the book that were completely cut out of the movie.
Yeah, I thought the movies were fine adaptations. I mean, Harry Potter... I like Harry Potter a lot, so I'm not dissing Harry Potter. But they don't need to have 5 hours worth of movie for each book. And the books are probably a little bit overlong.
You know what would be hard? You know what book would be hard to adapt?
Which book?
The Bible. That'd be a tough one. That's a little toughy. Probably have to do that in two parts.
Yeah. Part. Should we do the Bible part one and part two?
Let's call it
Old Testament.
Oh, New Testament, yeah.
Well done.
So, anyways.
I don't know if the Bible's quite filmable. I mean, it would be kind of exciting when you're like, oh, David and Goliath.
Yeah. But then when you get to the Psalms and somebody's just standing there reading, a little boring.
Well, what about like Paul's letters?
Well, it depends. If it's like a... what's it called when the voice is going over the action and he's kind of like narrating the story?
Over, so you see like...
Yes, what's it called when the voice is going over the... Yes, when he's voice he's voice-overing.
Wayne Henderson is ashamed
I know,
of you right now.
I know. So that'd be kind of cool. Like, we as he's talking about stuff, we're actually seeing the action live.
Oh, like in Corinth, because all the Corinthians church was up to no good.
Yeah, and like quick clips of all... debauchery, sexual immorality, murder.
R-rated Bible adaptation.
Well, it's got to be R-rated. Bible's not the most kid-friendly book.
What if we took the Bible and you know how like sometimes they will adapt something, but they'll adapt it into modern times like they did Hamlet.
Or Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. What if we did like a sci-fi Bible?
And adapt it into a modern science fiction story?
No. We'd adapt it into the future on spaceships.
Yes, that makes sense. But, okay, so then where's the flood? In space?
Supernova.
Oh.
God
taught Noah how
to... Air high five for that one.
God taught Noah how to make a ship that can sustain the Nova.
Yeah, he gave him a special suit.
No, a special ship. Okay. Where are all the animals going to go?
Well, but he's got to have a suit so he can go out onto the deck and release the space raven.
Oh, thank gosh. Where's the idea board?
Okay.
I'm going to tell my next piece of news while you write it down.
Noah in space, I think, would be part of it.
Just write down Space Raven.
Supernova flood.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to tell something here. David Goyer, who you knew. I'd never really heard of this guy before.
I don't know him.
You've heard of him.
Yeah, he co-wrote Batman Begins and Dark Knight and Dark City and lots of great movies.
That was not in my notes. I have him as the creator of Flash Forward.
Yeah, and that too.
He's going to write the Godzilla reboot.
Space.
Do we care about Godzilla? Does that need to be rebooted?
Yeah, I could go my entire life without another Godzilla movie and be just fine.
Yeah.
I don't see the point of this.
So, while you continue to write...
I got it written down. Supernova Flood and Space Raven.
I'll tell my weekly piece of Lost news.
Oh my gosh.
So, Tanya Raimondi,
this is the sci-fi Christian nap time.
Who was Alex in Lost, you may remember her.
Mm-hmm.
She will be in the next Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie called Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D.
Since when do we report on Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Since we listed horror as one of the genres.
Horror is one of our genres, but those are stupid movies.
I can't help it that it falls under one of our genres. There's lots of stupid sci-fi movies.
You just want to talk about Lost, and you fail to realize that just because somebody's associated with a show that you like doesn't mean that we need to follow their careers for the rest of eternity.
It's time for sci-fi news.
This isn't sci-fi news. This is Matt indulging his Lost obsession news.
Ben, what do you got next?
Well, I have Mr. Sean Bean has been cast as the king in Snow White. How much you want to bet he's going to die?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. You know, we keep talking about the Snow White movies because there's two of them. This one's the untitled one. What do you think about this?
I don't need two Snow White movies. Yeah. I'm not sure I need one.
This is the one that is also starring Julia Roberts and Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
I can't remember who's in the other one. Kristen Stewart and Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, this one's supposed to be kind of a comedy action.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's way worse. They should have stuck with...
They'll still kill Sean Bean.
Probably.
It'll be the one dark part of the movie.
Yeah. So, I think he is Snow White's dad.
He's the king. I don't recall there being a king in Snow White, but apparently
so he's definitely dying.
So he would be like Snow White's dad.
Who dies,
he
dies. Stepmother.
Yep. Yep. So Sean Bean,
oh my
spoiler
gosh.
Alert, he's going to die within the opening 15 minutes of Snow White.
Oh my gosh, he can't get a break. All right.
Speaking of Sean Bean, got a little Game of Thrones news for you.
Oh, okay.
The character of Brienne, or Brienne, I'm not sure how you're supposed to pronounce her name. Yeah. The audiobook does Brienne, but I have read on the internet that it's supposed to be Brienne, so one of those two, has been cast. Gwendolyn Christie. Now, what's interesting about this character, Matt, is you have not met her because she comes in book two, obviously. She is described as being one of the ugliest people in the world.
Oh, you told me about this character. Yeah.
So it's described as being extremely ugly.
Yeah. Did you look up this actress's picture?
Well, yeah, it was part of the news, and she is not ugly.
So they must be changing something.
I think they'll have a little bit of makeup. You know how they can have makeup? Yeah.
Yeah, because I couldn't actually hire an ugly lady.
Yeah, congratulations, you've been cast as the ugly character. Well done.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
Yeah, so this is cool to see the ball starting to get rolling. There also is rumor that one of the actors from Camelot is going to be cast in Game of Thrones, but we don't know who it is. But it's interesting because there's a couple of big-name actors in that. There is Joseph Fiennes, who was in Flash Forward.
He's going to be in Camelot? Or he was in Camelot?
He was in Camelot. And then Eva Green.
From James Bond?
Yes, James Bond, Kingdom of Heaven.
And the movie Golden Compass.
Oh, I didn't see it. Yeah, so she is also in Camelot, so it could be one of those two. And the rumor would be that Eva Green might play Melisande, who would be, you haven't met her yet, but she would be an awesome in that role. And then Joseph Fiennes would play Stannis Baratheon, the brother of Robert Baratheon.
Oh my gosh, that would be pretty awesome. So
I don't know if I would like him as much in that role.
I picture Stannis as kind of like a beefier, taller guy. Is that how you
picture him? I don't know if he's beefier.
Like stronger.
I don't think he's stronger.
Like fights with a battle axe.
He's meaner.
Okay.
He doesn't really do a lot of fighting.
I don't know. I haven't ever met him in the book.
Yeah, someday you'll meet him.
Ben.
But also more Game of Thrones news.
I want to talk about Game of Thrones for a second.
Okay.
I'm kind of bummed out that it got so popular in the sense that every little bit of news they're talking about, and it's not really big spoilers, but they'll tell me, oh, fan favorite, blah, 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 got cast. Now I know, well, this person is supposed to be a likable person or is going to be. So no matter how they're introduced to me at first, I know.
Whoa, you don't know that.
Okay, this is what I'm saying. That when the headline is, and I'm not going to say which actor it is, when the headline is, blank, a fan favorite was cast, that tells me this character, even if they start out bad, is going to end up being good.
No, it doesn't. Because a fan favorite, like you could describe a lot of people as a fan favorite who are not necessarily good characters. Everybody's a great character in the series.
Okay.
So I think that you're inferring way too much
I'm not saying good like good guy. I'm just saying like, you know, it could mean that they're important. It could mean that they play some role that
might not anticipate. If you're getting casting news, they're going to be an important character. Yeah. However, I guarantee you that there has been some people with some of the casting news who have been called fan favorite who are not necessarily heroic characters.
Okay.
So don't read too much into that.
Okay.
And also don't assume that that automatically means they're going to be around forever because, as you know, fan favorites sometimes die.
Correct.
So I think that do not worry about getting spoiled. You are maybe inferring a bit too much from that statement.
Excellent.
And that is all I will say.
What do you got next for Game of Thrones?
Dance with Dragons became the highest selling fiction book in a single day this year.
Wow.
So it sold like, I think about 300,000 copies altogether between audiobook, ebook, and hard copy. It also is done its part to help revive brick and mortar bookstores.
Really?
Yeah.
In what way?
I guess people are going to the bookstore instead of waiting for online shipping to go get their book because they want it now.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
And you read it, Ben.
I have finished it, yeah.
We just finished doing the intro for the review. I couldn't be with you on the whole review because I obviously am 4 years behind.
Right, so, but yeah.
Or four books behind us.
Really, really enjoyed the book. So I will have my review up later.
How many pages is it?
958.
And it took you 5 days?
Yeah, I read like 400 pages yesterday.
Wow.
I'm going to reread it slower now because I wanted to read it so bad. So it's like you go through it fast. Like I wasn't skimming,
yeah,
but I was going through it fast because I wanted to. I just wanted to get the story.
Yeah.
And now I want to go back and read it slower so you can kind of get all of his hints. And there's so many subtle moments that you miss kind of your first time through in all of his books because you're trying to get the plot. And then once you got the plot and you know the plot twist, then you can go back and get all the subtle character moments and the hints and all the clues that he's setting up for future volumes. So I want to go back and read that stuff now.
Awesome.
Finally, George R. R. Martin is doing okay on the bestseller list, Matt.
Yes. You actually read this to me last night. Give us all the numbers.
So he has books at 6, 7, 9, 10, 11, and 12 on the New York Times paperback bestseller list. And I'm pretty sure he's going to have a book at number 1 on the hardcover bestseller
list.
That's
amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think his books
have like the best time in his life right now.
Yeah, he's had like 2 million copies of his books printed since this year began.
Yeah.
Which is like he's doubled the number of copies in print over the last 6 months.
HBO like reinvigorated his career because, to be honest, I mean this guy's been around for a long time. I never heard of him until...
Yeah, but you're not that knowledgeable about the fantasy novel genre.
I suppose that's true.
But I mean, you know, like general, TV and...
Yeah, but I recognize the well-known books. Even if I don't read them, I recognize them.
Would you recognize the name Robert Jordan?
I would.
Only because I've told you about him.
So?
Before we started doing this show, would you have recognized his name?
I don't know.
Would you have recognized names like Frank Herbert?
No.
Okay.
So I'm not as well known. Not as well knowledgeable as I think.
Nope.
Okay.
Robert Heinlein.
Well, yeah, Robert Heinlein, right.
Yeah. Thank you for proving my point. No, he was a huge... His last book was number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list.
So, I've never even seen these books and all my visits to Borders and Barnes & Noble. And here they are
today.
That's
because you don't go into the fantasy sci-fi section for the books.
But,
that's where they are.
But shouldn't they be at like the bestsellers?
They will be at the bestsellers immediately after they've been released. They're not going to stay there forever.
So, in conclusion, George R. R. Martin, congratulations.
Yeah, he's doing very well financially for himself, and hopefully that inspires him to write a bit faster, because I do not want... There's way too many cliffhangers at the end of this book for me to wait 5.5 more years. So let's get that book done now.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so a little instructions there for George R. R. Martin. Matt.
Yes.
You talked about Harry Potter and how you've enjoyed the last few movies.
Sure.
David Yates was the director of all the movies from Order of the Phoenix onwards.
Oh my gosh, all the best ones.
Yeah.
I
think he's probably been the best director in the series.
Yeah.
And he is now rumored to be adapting a couple of projects that you and I are quite interested in.
I read about this on our website. One of our journalists put
this
down there.
Mr. Brandon was reporting this news to us. And do you want to share what the projects are, Matt?
I only remember one. He is looking at adapting Fables, finally.
Yeah, Fables would be pretty awesome. Also, The Stand.
Oh, yeah, The Stand. That's
right.
Is
in there. And
both of these are books that we like.
Yeah, and then also an Al Capone biopicture, which would be interesting, but I really hope that he does either Fables or The Stand.
Which one would you prefer? I know this is tough for you, but pick one.
It depends on if they're willing to say, we'll give you... If they said, we'll do a trilogy for Fables, definitely Fables. If they said, you have to do everything in one movie, can't happen.
I don't know. I remember liking book one of Fables, but it didn't become amazing to me until...
Well, who says he's just going to do book one?
Well, I'm trying to think of where they would start.
Yeah.
And so I hope that they would... Yeah, you're right. They would have to do it as a trilogy.
You would have to do a trilogy of issues 1 through 75.
Yes.
That would
not
make
books 1 through 75, but issues. So not the trades. So,
no. Yeah. There have not been 75 trades yet.
Yeah. So
someday.
I think you're right. That's exactly what I would want. So just take out the best parts of that overarching story.
Yep, and do 3 movies out of them. That would be really, really sweet.
Good.
And it could be pretty amazing. The Stand would be great too, but again, if they try and do it in one movie, not going to work. way too long and way too...
What they should do for Stand, instead of doing a trilogy like Fables, which maybe is released one a year or one over a couple years, the Stand should do like a release in November and a release in June. Like have 6 months apart.
Oh, do like part one, part two?
Yeah.
Like what they just did for Harry Potter? That would work well.
Yeah.
I like your thinking. Thank you. And I hope the studios listen to you and take up on your idea.
You know what I think would be a great movie?
What?
Prometheus.
Oh, tell me about it.
Well, you know, this is a movie that's written by Damon Lindelof of Lost.
Oh, my God.
We've been talking about it before. Guess what, Ben? They're doing some filming in Iceland.
And what are they filming there?
Well, they're quoted... I don't know if this is a spoiler. It was in the headline. It's been quoted as they're going to be filming the beginning of time.
Huh.
Yeah. And guess who's going to be on hand to be filming for that?
Who?
Michael Fassbender.
Magneto.
Yep. First Class.
So is he going to play God?
I don't know. And Charlize Theron.
Who played God's buddy?
I don't know.
I mean, if it's the beginning of time.
I don't know what characters they're going to play, but...
Adam and Eve?
I don't know. Ooh. So there it is.
I don't know. Iceland doesn't exactly strike me as Eden.
There's some waterfall there that they're shooting.
Oh, okay.
Like a big waterfall. You know, at the beginning of time...
Are you just making this up?
No, it's true.
I'm pretty sure you're making this up.
It's really true.
False news.
So...
Matt, we had a couple new trailers that were released this week.
I saw one.
We just watched one. John Carter, formerly titled John Carter of Mars. This movie I was not that excited about, but it looks awesome.
So if I understand the trailer correct, he's from the Wild West time.
Yeah, he's like a Civil War guy, and he gets transported to Mars.
And it's kind of a fantasy realm, Mars, so it's not Mars like you think of.
Yeah, because the book was written in like 1910, so you have to think... You have to kind of filter out your scientific knowledge of what Mars actually looks like, because back in the day, everybody thought it was this great fantasy world.
So it looks actiony and could be dramatic and all that stuff, but it's actually put out by Disney, so maybe it's going to be some sort of franchise they're going for.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. There's like 10 books in the series or whatever. And it's directed by one of the guys who's associated with Pixar. And I'm not sure what movies he's done, but he's directed animated movies for Pixar, and now this is his first live action. And I was really impressed by the trailer. I think it looks really, really good.
It does look really good. But did you think it looked as good as The Dark Knight Rises?
No, but we're not to Dark Knight Rises news yet.
Is that the other trailer you were going to talk about?
No.
What's the other trailer?
I have two, actually.
Oh.
I have The Thing remake. Did you ever watch the original Thing with John Carpenter and Kurt Russell?
I did not.
That's a really good movie. Like, I know you don't like horror, so you might not do it. What are you doing?
Something was on my computer. I had to blow it off.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what it was. It was like
fuzzy. Is it okay now?
Yeah, it's good. I don't know why you...
Why are you petting your computer?
I'm trying to clean it now, the keyboard.
Okay, that's really annoying. You know we can hear that, the microphone, right? Yes.
That's picking up?
You can hear it in your headphones, right?
Oh, I'm sitting right here, so of course I can hear it.
Well, I can hear it. Okay. So that means it's on the show.
Well, if you wouldn't have pointed it out, you could have kept talking about John Carpenter, and
I like to point it out when you're doing things you're trying to hide from the audience. I want people to have an immersive experience. So the other trailer I wanted to talk about, Matt, is we have talked about the show Once Upon a Time on ABC before.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited about
this. And they actually had showed a clip that I was not impressed by, but this is why I don't like watching those clips, because you're seeing them out of context, and now that we've actually seen a trailer for the show, it looks really, really good.
This is the one I've been saying is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you stand corrected.
No, I think Grimm's also going to be good. I think we're going to have two good Fables-type shows coming out this fall.
I predict that Once Upon a Time becomes my favorite show of the new season.
Really? Like, your favorite show, period?
Favorite new show of the new season.
Okay, so just favorite show that's coming out for the first time this year.
Yes.
Because it's not going to be better than Game of Thrones.
Right. Favorite new show.
It'll probably be better than Fringe.
Possibly.
Yeah, take that, Scott and Miles.
All right.
So what else do you have, Matt? Do you have anything else before we get to Dark Knight Rises news?
I want to talk about a couple graphic novels I read.
Okay.
But is that listener feedback, since I'm a listener?
Sure. We don't have a lot of listener feedback, so do you want to save it for them?
I'll save it. I read two new graphic novels.
You can do like, Dear Ben and Matt, this week.
Okay, good.
Okay, so do it like that.
I'm going to write that while you talk.
Okay, to the Batmobile, Matt.
Let's go.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Big Dark Knight Rises this week, Matt.
I kind of stole your thunder with that trailer.
I know, sure.
Sorry, when I said it, your face was like, are you kidding me?
You're not in the right segment, man. Pull it together.
So I saw it when I went to Harry Potter.
And what did you think?
It was good. It showed a lot of scenes from previous movies, but there was a few key scenes from the new one. We saw Bane. We kind of saw a scene with his really beefy standing face to face with Batman. And we saw, I think it was Gordon in a hospital bed.
Yeah.
And, so this might be a spoiler, but it's in the trailer. So
that's Dark Knight Rises news, man.
Yeah. So Gordon's in the bed talking to somebody who I'm assuming is Batman.
I think it's Bruce Wayne.
That's the thing. I think it is Bruce Wayne because it's not like Batman could just go strolling into a hospital.
Hi, Gordon.
So are we...
I'm the fugitive you're looking for.
Are we to assume that Gordon is going to know the identity of Batman?
I think we can assume that.
Wow. That's a big spoiler.
That's not a big spoiler.
Well, it's not... I mean, I'm surprised they revealed that in the trailer is what I'm saying.
We're inferring it from what they revealed in the trailer. That's way different than them actually revealing it. So... So
I guess he could have been talking to anybody. It could have been Two-Face.
Matt, I have a little confrontation. We need to have a little confrontation about this.
Me and you?
No, you. I need to confront you about something that you told to the sci-fi Christian audience that has since been proved false.
I told something to the sci-fi Christian audience.
You did. Brandon wrote in, and he said he was going to go media dark on The Dark Knight Rises. He was not going to watch any trailers, look at posters, look at
news.
And
then I agreed and said I also
you said you would do it as well. And here we are.
Yep.
Within 24 hours of the new trailer being released, what have you done, Matt?
What am I supposed to do? I'm sitting there at Harry Potter. I can't not watch.
I have seen you when you want to avoid trailers. I've seen you after episodes of Lost cover your ears and run out of the room.
I can't run out
going,
of
la, 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 because you don't want to actually hear anything.
I couldn't do that in a theater next to my
family.
You
could have said, oh, excuse me, I'll be right back.
No, that's crazy. I was in the top back far row.
That's not my problem.
Nope. So here's what, I agree. I was going to avoid more things.
You have broken your vow to the sci-fi Christian audience.
Last week's, remember when you kind of told me some spoilery things? And I was kind of upset. I think, though, if you do have any more news, I'm going to maybe take off my headphones.
Okay, well, the only other news I have is that the poster is also out.
Oh,
and it looks awesome.
Hold on, let me take off my headphones.
What, you've seen it already?
Oh, yeah.
Because you are not actually doing The Dark Knight Rises media black.
Maybe I'm doing Brandon like a media gray.
I think that you are pretty much participating in all the news that has come out about The Dark Knight Rises thus far.
Thus far. But we have a year to go. I mean, in fact, do you know how many days we have left?
Oh, my gosh. I am not on the ball today, Matt.
Something's wrong, Ben. Maybe we're doing this too early.
I don't know.
We're recording here in the afternoon. It's 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. And we usually record at evening time.
I know. It's totally throwing me off. 368 days, 10 hours, 20 minutes, and 35 seconds to go.
Are you saying that in 3 days we're just 1 year away from Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah, so what would that be? Today is
the
17th.
Are we going to be in San Diego when it's released?
Maybe. Because we're going to go to Comic-Con next year.
Yeah, what if we see it in San Diego that we can't do our IMAX plan and all of the listeners
coming? Oh, we can.
All of our listeners that are coming to Minneapolis or to meet with us are going to be...
Well, they'll just come to San Diego. Comic-Con/Dark Knight Rises party.
Don't buy tickets to Minneapolis.
Yet.
Until we know where it is.
Well, let's see. So next year... So it must be coming out on a Thursday. So it would seem like we would probably still be here.
No, I think next year's a leap year.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I bet you they'll move it up to a Wednesday release.
Yeah, they will.
So
we've been giving the wrong day for months.
Well, no, we're going off of the official news.
Well, is that official, really? Because it looks like a fan website.
That's official based on the official release date.
Okay.
So, but most likely we'll be okay. So we could probably organize something where everybody flies here first. We watch Dark Knight Rises
and
together.
And then fly again
to
San Diego? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big week.
That'd be huge. It's going to be the best week in sci-fi Christian history.
Wow. I can't wait for next year.
I know. It's going to be incredible. I'm just happy that you're not complaining about our plan to see Dark Knight Rises like you normally do.
No. I don't mind going to see it. And I don't even mind seeing it twice. But when we start saying, let's see it midnight, in the afternoon, and then again at nighttime, I don't know if I want to see it three times in an IMAX.
Okay, that was maybe a little excessive.
Okay. So that's the only news we have for Dark Knight?
That's it. And then also, Batman Year One finally has a release date.
Oh, when is it going?
October 18th, one day before my birthday.
Yay.
That's going to be an awesome day for Batman. Do you know why?
Yes.
Okay.
Because, well, lots of reasons, but why don't you start?
No. You said you knew why, so you proved that you actually knew.
First of all, as we know, Batman Year One comes out that day.
Uh-huh.
And you said that day or that week?
That day.
That day is also good because you may remember from history that Batman...
It has nothing historical.
I give up then.
Batman Arkham City, the sequel to the groundbreaking video game Batman Arkham Asylum, is also coming out.
Holy cow, video game. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. I love Arkham Asylum.
Should I play Arkham Asylum with you first?
You should play it by yourself first because it's single player.
Could I sit with you while I play it?
I don't know that I would like that.
You could wear a cape. I could wear a cape. You could wear a Robin mask.
Well, how about you play it at your own house?
What system is it for?
Oh, it's for every system. You can get it on PC. You can download it on PC today.
That's okay. All right. Well, I think that's all for Dark Neat News. Let's do
Dark Neat News.
Let's do some main event.
Okay.
Ben, Lord of the Rings.
I love talking about Lord of the Rings. I'm so glad we're doing another Lord of the Rings theme show.
So we're going to talk about the top five for both
The Sam one person out there who hates Lord of the Rings is furious. Like, I'm never listening to those guys again. But the rest of us are excited because we all love Lord of the Rings, right?
I like it very much.
And you want to do a Harry Potter show next week, don't you?
I do, and I have some notes that I'll
So we're kind of on a fantasy kick lately on the Sci-Fi Christian.
I think we should do Harry Potter. I think it's timely.
Yeah, I've got no problem. It's good to maybe group some of the stuff. We did a lot of superhero stuff right in a row initially, and now maybe we're doing a bit more fantasy.
Yay. I'll bring my broom.
Okay, that'll be weird.
For flying. So Sam and Frodo both have messianic qualities.
Definitely.
Let's name top five.
Is that all the introduction that you wanted to do? Okay, so we talked about this a bit on our Lord of the Rings episode, and then also Brady brought it up, that Sam and Frodo are really kind of the two heroes of Lord of the Rings when you actually break it down.
Definitely.
And you were kind of thinking about this, Matt, as you were watching the show or the movies, because you had not seen them for a long time, mm-hmm. and you were commenting to me, even as we were watching them, that as you were watching it, that Sam really clicked for you as kind of a messianic character and almost as the true hero of the whole story.
Big time. I have left that trilogy viewing liking Sam a jillion times more than little betrayer Frodo.
Who did Frodo betray, man?
The world.
Okay.
I'll explain.
Okay. But that started a conversation between you and I about who is the real hero of the story. I think you asked me that. Mm-hmm. And I came to the conclusion, and I think you agreed with me, that they are both the hero, and both of them together kind of make up separate parts of the messianic qualities that we look for in Jesus. And they both reflect to us different parts of Jesus and what he did for us.
I wouldn't be surprised if Frodo was to say to Sam, just like Jerry Maguire, "You complete me."
Oh, that's good. So, not really. So, how do we want to do this, Matt?
Jerry Maguire reminds me of the piece of news that I wanted to give.
I like Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, so
it's a good movie.
We're going to go back to news here for 1 second.
Okay. Oh, I have another
piece. Actually, I'm just going to save it for next week.
Okay. I can save mine. Did you know James Franco is dissing Planet of the Apes?
Is that your news?
Yeah.
You're giving it away right now. Well, then I'm going to give you mine. He's dissing the one he's about to be in?
Yeah, do you want me to read you what he said?
Yeah.
Okay, we're a little out of sequence. This is like off week here on the Science of Christian.
Something is horribly
I feel
wrong.
Like I want to go to sleep.
It has to be dark outside when we record.
Yeah, but I like recording in the afternoon more.
All the sun is hurting my eyes.
I know. It's so humid here in Minnesota today. It's like 2,000 degrees outside.
So he's about to be, or this movie's about to be released, and he's already saying bad things about it.
So according to Blaster, he said in an interview this week, "I never thought of this movie as an example of my creativity. I was an actor for hire. They haven't shown me the movie yet, so I don't know what the result is. I did reshoots, and it sounds to me like the final movie will be different from the screenplay, which had a lot of character development.
Uh-oh.
The movie seems to be more action now. I went and did my job, and I'm supposed to be a scientist. I feel pretty confident that I did that."
Why would you say this? Doesn't he want to make money?
I think he's saying, "I made my money, and now I want to distance myself from this movie that I did not particularly enjoy."
That's not a good sign.
Yeah, so if you were super excited, Matt, for Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I was too. It looked really good in the trailer.
So are you less excited now? That's a pretty big statement.
Yeah, because especially if he says that they're making it mostly an action movie, and you know me, I like character and plot development more than I like nonstop action. So little iffy on this one.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll come back to this thought. So I said Jerry Maguire, which reminded me of Tom Cruise, which reminded me of Mission Impossible, which reminded me of
That's not sci-fi.
Just hear me out.
Okay.
Which reminded me of a person I wanted to talk about, Jeremy Renner.
Oh, yeah.
This guy is getting a ton of work. He's going to be in Avengers as Hawkeye. He is, he's been cast as the new lead in the Bourne movies, right?
I think so.
Yeah, and so he's going to kind of take over that franchise, and he's going to be in the next Mission Impossible movie to take over for Tom Cruise. So I think it's kind of like a passing of the torch. Tom Cruise is moving out. Jeremy Renner is moving in. So what's happening with this guy? He's taking on all these new franchises.
I don't know.
He must be awesome. Have you seen him in anything?
Yeah. What was
Hurt Locker?
Yeah, I did not like that movie very much.
Did you like him in it, though?
He was fine. He didn't, like, blow me away.
I didn't see that movie. In fact, the only thing I might have seen him in is Thor.
Oh, for like 10 seconds?
For like 10 seconds. I don't know if I've seen him in anything else.
Yeah, I guess because Hurt Locker was such a huge hit. I know he was in something else, but I can't remember it right now.
So, you heard it here first. Jeremy Renner. The next big thing.
Yeah.
Or is he?
But that's not really sci-fi news.
Just got me thinking.
Okay, well, I'm glad it got you thinking. All right, Matt.
So back to the top five.
How do we want to do this? Do we want to do both of us do Sam and Frodo simultaneously?
Yeah, let's do that. But our lists are slightly different, as you know.
They will be slightly different. My but probably list, have some overlap.
Yeah, my list is more kind of like Jesus-y qualities.
You mean messianic?
Well, messianic, but also some Jesus-specific things.
Who is the Messiah, dude?
Jesus.
So when you say Jesus-y qualities, doesn't that mean...
But there's characters like Neo that have messianic qualities, but not necessarily Jesus-y qualities.
A messianic quality is a Jesus-y quality.
I'm saying there could be... Okay, you'll know when I read my list.
Okay.
When I read my list, you'll know what I mean.
I will defer judgment on the use of just, Jesus-y.
Let me give you one of my runners-up just to make clear what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
There's a scene in Fellowship of the Ring where Frodo decides to take off alone in a boat. And what does Sam do? He jumps into the water after him. You know what? Kind of like Jesus walking on the water. That's why it's...
And why did Jesus walk on the water?
Because he can.
Because he's the Messiah?
Yeah. So
that would be a messianic quality?
But you can't say walking on water is a messianic quality.
Because
that doesn't save people. I think messianicness saves people.
Okay.
So it's a Jesus-y quality. Because he's walking in the water, but it's not a messianic quality because it doesn't actually bring redemption.
So I will be doing the top five messianic qualities. Matt will be doing the top five Jesus-y qualities.
Okay, so that was my runner-up for Sam.
Very good. I actually don't have any runners-up this week.
Okay.
I just focused on the good stuff. But wait, can we talk about this runners-up for a second that you just did?
Walking on water.
It doesn't... He stunk!
I know, but he went into the water. That's why.
Wait a second. So everyone who goes swimming is doing a Jesus-y thing?
It's a runner-up.
So if I take a bath, I'd be Jesus-y. So, Matt, we just actually had to pause recording because immediately after I said, so if I took a bath, that would be a Jesus-y quality, you literally almost died.
I almost drowned. I was taking a drink of water,
and
I almost drowned.
You started to laugh. And
that was
you turned purple and fell out of your chair.
Let's be specific. I didn't fall out.
You fell out of your chair, more or less.
I got out of my chair to stand to immediately leave.
And wow. Are you okay now?
That was serious.
Okay, I would like a response to my question.
Look at my eyes.
I know, you're like crying over here. I've never seen you react this strongly.
Wow.
To anything.
That was pretty funny, though.
That was hilarious. Well, I wish that we had that on video.
Yes.
Oh,
if
only
we had kept on video.
Yeah, but your camera only lasts for 40 minutes before it runs out of batteries.
I'm going to take a drink while you talk for a second.
Okay, so I would like a response to that question, though, because I challenged you before you nearly died. We're not letting this go. That I said, if I took a bath, according to you, that would be a Jesus equality.
All I'm saying is as I was constructing my list...
Uh-huh.
I remembered Sam walking through water.
Well, okay, walking through and walking on, there's a huge difference between those two, right?
Yes. That's why it's a runner-up. But I think it explained what I was saying with Jesus-y.
If Sam had walked on water,
For a second, he was walking on water before he actually fell into it.
Okay, again, like everyone does. Like if I jump off a diving board... For a millisecond, I'm walking on water.
Well, just wait till you see the rest of my top five.
Okay, I can't wait for this. So, should we start with Sam or with Frodo?
I think Sam seems to make the most sense.
Okay. Would you like to go first?
I don't think I should. I'm gonna cough again.
All right.
And then you talk.
Number five. All right, my number five, Matt, goes a bit beyond what was in the movies. And so, that's the other thing where we'll be a little different is I'm going to bring a little bit of... the book knowledge, and I'm even going to read a couple excerpts from the book.
All right.
So, Sam. Oh my gosh, we are so out of it today. So Sam in the book, after Frodo goes off and does his thing and he goes away and sails across the sea, we find out Sam comes back to Hobbiton. And we had talked in our previous Lord of the Rings episode about the scouring of the Shires. So things are not good. Sam stays around and he is elected mayor like 13 times. Wow. And so he stays and establishes himself in the community and he helps to restore the Shire. Mm-hmm. So I look at that as a very messianic quality where the Shire has basically been destroyed by Saruman and the scouring of the Shire and all this stuff. And Sam, through his influence, through everything that he has learned and experienced, uses all of that to bring restoration to people who would be devastated without his skills and abilities that he brings to him.
Very good.
Galadriel, in the gift-giving scene you might remember from Fellowship of the Ring. He gets the rope. In the book, he also gets a little box of stuff that's supposed to help his garden grow.
Oh.
And so he helps share that and also helps use that to restore the Shire in the book. So Sam brings restoration to the Shire in quite a messianic and Jesus-y fashion.
Very good.
Number five for you.
My number five is going to be, we're going to have to go back again to Fellowship of the Ring. In fact, back to that same moment right before he walked on water.
Uh-huh.
And you might remember that earlier, Gandalf had said, stick close to Frodo.
Don't you leave him, Samwise Gamgee.
And Sam promised
that he would. I don't mean to.
Right. And so in the same way, you know who's a really good promise keeper? God. He makes some promises in the Old Testament. There's some...
You know, these are not divine qualities. These are messianic qualities.
Are you saying Jesus isn't divine?
Oh, I'm saying that
right
Jesus... No. We're talking about Jesus in the role of the Messiah as opposed to the promises God made in the Old Testament.
Jesus is coming as Messiah, fulfills promises. He's a promise keeper. You know who else is? Sam, a promise keeper to the extreme. Even to walking on water.
Yeah. Couldn't you just say that Jesus made promises as Messiah? I can just keep it within the messianic realm.
Jesus made promises, but Jesus is God.
Okay. Well, I'm not disagreeing, but God the Father is not the Messiah.
I think I damaged my vocal cords.
I think you might die.
So I have to confess something.
Yes.
When I first started joking, I realized I probably shouldn't try to swallow what I have in my mouth. I kind of let it all dribble on your floor.
I saw that. It was really gross. That was not your most Jesus-y moment ever.
I'm really thrown off right now.
That's okay. That's going to be a weird show, everyone.
So number four
for me. Similar there, though. I took a different approach to it. It's kind of that same scene where Sam stays with Frodo, and I looked at it as that everyone else has abandoned Frodo at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movies, they kind of all agreed that they were going to leave him. In the books, he kind of more just leaves. But in any case, Frodo's off on his own. And Sam is the one who stays with him, which is quite messianic, where Jesus promises to never leave us or forsake us. And so even when everyone else forsakes you, Sam does not.
That's true. You know, my number four ties in with that. In fact, Jesus is kind of known as a rock. You know what I mean? Like there to support.
Yes.
And who is a better support than Sam?
Sam the Rock. So he's kind of like Peter that way.
Sam the Rock Gamgee.
So,
oh my gosh, people's elbow.
A bit like, wait, what?
Dwayne The Rock Johnson's finishing move is called the people's elbow.
Yeah, that doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about, actually.
Well, he's The Rock, Sam The Rock.
Okay.
Like Peter.
Yeah, that's what I just said, which is much more...
Petros.
Yeah, Petros.
Petros.
Yeah.
A little Greek accent there.
Yeah, this is the Greek report, I guess.
Okay.
All right, Matt, for my number three, I am actually going to play a clip from the end of the Two Towers.
Was Jesus also called like a shield and a protector, or was that just God the Father?
I don't know.
Because I'm going to say Sam is also kind of a protector and a shield.
I think that's probably more God the Father.
Yeah, but they're like the same.
They're not the same.
Trinity.
Have you not been paying attention in theology class, dude?
Basically the same.
Basically.
So what are you playing?
A clip from the end of Two Towers.
To
which
prove
is
what point?
Sam's number three messianic moment. I'm not proving a point. I'm showing the scene.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay.
I can't do this, Sam. I know. It's all wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here. But we are. like in the great stories, Mr. Frugal. The ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing. This shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it'll shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you. That meant something. Even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going. Because they were holding on to something. What are we holding on to, Sam? There's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo. And it's worth fighting for.
There it is.
Oh, man. That's one of the best speeches in all three movies.
Totally. I was really tempted to make that my number one moment. There's a couple that I think are slightly more messianic, but that had to make the list. Such a great scene. Perfect example of Sam in that messianic quality, inspiring Frodo to keep going and fight the darkness and all of that great stuff.
This is my number three, but I worded it differently. I said, Frodo could not have been a savior without Sam.
Totally. So just all of that encouragement, and that's really the best kind of summing up example moment from the trilogy of what Sam really is doing constantly throughout the entire story.
I love that. So actually, I started getting a few goosebumps there while that was happening, and I was thinking back to our day of watching it.
Don't die again, please.
That was a good day.
Yeah, it was a good day. It was a long day.
Yeah.
But
so, Ben, you're number two.
My number two for Sam is something that, again, the movies don't really go into a lot. In the movies, remember the part where Frodo's attacked by Shelob, and Sam thinks that...
Wait, the spider? Dead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Sam takes the ring from him, and then eventually gives it back to Frodo, right?
Yeah.
In the books, Sam puts it on, and is tempted.
Oh.
And I want to read you the temptation of Mr. Samwise Gamgee here.
Ooh.
So...
This is like the temptation of Jesus.
This is right after Sam has put on the ring, and Tolkien writes, thank you for pointing that out, by the way, already the ring tempted him, gnawing at his will and reason. Wild fantasies arose in his mind, and he saw Samwise the Strong, hero of the age, striding with a flaming sword across the darkened land, and armies flocking to his call as he marched to overthrow Barad-dûr. And then all the clouds rolled away, and the white sun shone, and at his command the Vale of Gorgoroth became a garden of flowers and trees, and brought forth fruit. He had only to put on the ring, and claim it for his own, and all this could be. In that hour of trial, it was the love of his master that helped most to hold him firm, but also deep down in him lived some unconquered, still unconquered his plain hobbit sense. He knew in the core of his heart that he was not large enough to bear such a burden, even if such visions were not a mere cheat to betray him. The one small garden of a free gardener was all his need and due, not a garden swollen to a realm, his own hands to use, not the hands of others to command. And anyway, all these notions are only a trick, he said to himself. He'd spot me and cow me before I could so much as shout out. He'd spot me pretty quick if I put the ring on now in Mordor. Well, all I can say is things look as hopeless as a frost in spring. Just when being invisible would really be useful, I can't use the ring. And if I ever get any further, it's going to be nothing but a drag and a burden every step. So what's to be done?
He did it.
He did it. Very much like Jesus' temptation.
Wow. Sam, way to go, Buster.
Yeah, and it's so cool, like, with his temptation compared to so many other people's. Because Sam sees all the good that he could bring. Out of stuff, whereas other people feel the lust for power.
Yeah.
Sam sees the good that he could do with the ring. And wow. I think that's very much like with Jesus and the devil, where the devil's like, see all these kingdoms, they can be yours, and think of all the good you can do. But where Jesus knew his purpose, Sam knows his purpose as well. Resist temptation, and is really the only person in the trilogy
who
bears the ring and resists temptation.
Wow, so in this case, resistance was not futile.
No, it was not. Wow. Well done, Mr. Sam.
Wow, I love Sam.
He's so cool.
His character gets better and better every time I think about him.
Totally.
Which is every time we record about the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, we should do just the Lord of the Rings report from now on.
My number two, Ben. Would you like to say it for me?
Number two.
Number two. You know what Sam did?
Lots of stuff.
He sacrificed his life willingly. Not in actually giving up his death, but all the comforts, his regular life that he had. He gave it up for the greater good, but ultimately really for Frodo.
Yeah.
So both things. He was willing to give up himself for doing good.
Bit like the incarnation.
A bit Jesus-y.
I think that would be a bit messianic, actually.
Messianic.
Very good. All right, my number one reason or example of Sam in a messianic role would have to be at the very end. Well, not the very end, but at the very end of their quest in Return of the King.
This is my number one.
Frodo falls down.
I love it.
Sam carries him.
This is my... I mean,
so cool.
This is the scene that is seared into my brain.
Uh-huh.
I see it, and I love it. And this is why Sam is my... I mean, this is why he's the best.
Totally.
This is my number one best.
Yeah, because Frodo could not make it one step further, so Sam throws him on his back and carries him forward. So good.
Doesn't he say, I can't carry the ring for you, but I can carry you?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So awesome.
I love it. I'm glad
Sam's the man.
He totally is.
Yeah.
I wish I saved him for last.
Frodo's the worst. Yeah, you're kind of mean to Frodo.
I don't love Frodo, but he's not the worst.
Did you have any other runner-ups besides your...
Nope, just the water walking.
Well, okay. Yeah, that was... Your other examples were much better than that one.
Good. Thank you.
You moved in the right direction. Well done, sir.
All right, Ben, what's your number five for Frodo?
My number five is to go back to that scene that we talked about at the end of Fellowship where Sam stays with Frodo, and that was very messianic of him to not abandon Frodo and keep the promise.
Mm-hmm.
It's also messianic of Frodo because he sees that if he sticks around, the ring is going to bring everyone else down with him. So rather than keeping this thing around that's going to corrupt other people, he takes it solely upon himself and chooses to take the burden by himself and to save the other people in the fellowship. He sacrifices himself for the others in the fellowship.
Interesting. You know, I have a similar one, so I'm just going to take mine out of order just for the sake of us not repeating the same things.
Okay.
So I have as one of mine carrying the burden of the world because this is to save the world.
Yeah. Well, I have that one slightly different.
Oh, you've worded it a little different?
Well, so I saw this as a specific moment.
Okay, well, I'm talking about in general.
Yeah.
His carrying of the ring, and this might have been my one or two, so this is high up there for me.
Yeah.
His carrying of the ring is a burden that others could try to do, but might not be able to do as well as him. And he's carrying this burden for the whole world to save them from Sauron.
Yeah. That's my number one thing.
Oh, my gosh. Spoiler alert. Yeah, I guess that would have been my one or two. So that's a great one.
Yeah, my number five was more in the vein of being just him sparing the fellowship in that specific moment. But definitely his willingness to bear the ring overall has got to be number one. So
that's your number four, actually. It just got lowered in its goodness. Well, all right, I'll give you my number four.
Okay.
Let's see. Which one should I take? These are really going to be out of order now then. Okay, here's a cool one. I thought about this. As we're going through the whole trilogy, the only hobbits we see once they leave the Shire are just the four, correct?
Yep, until the very end.
So in a way, Frodo left his world and came into a world that was not his own.
Very true.
And, you know, again, to make a difference.
A little incarnational.
Incarnation.
So both Sam and Frodo incarnate into the larger world.
Yeah, because remember how Jesus was God in heaven,
yeah,
and then he came down and became a man.
Yes.
I'm being specific here.
Spoiler alert. If you've only made it through the Old Testament,
that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. It's also very similar to the incarnation in this sense, Matt, is that Jesus comes into the world and he's not what people were expecting, mm-hmm, and he's kind of lowly born and he's born in the stable and all this stuff. And Sam and Frodo are very similar in that they're not the heroes the world's expecting. They're expecting somebody like Aragorn or Boromir to be the one who takes the ring and saves the world. And they do their part,
yeah,
but it's the lowly hero who actually comes through.
Ooh,
in the end.
You're right.
Very much like how Jesus, in the way he was not the Messiah that the Jews were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
Sam and Frodo were not the heroes that the world was expecting.
Right, because Jesus was really short, like a hobbit.
I don't know if we know that for sure.
Yeah, it's right there in the Bible.
Non-canonical reference.
No, it's true. For example, you know the story of Zacchaeus?
Uh-huh.
Well, it says right there clearly that Zacchaeus had to climb a tree to see Jesus because Jesus was so short.
I don't think it says that.
Yep, it says it doesn't specify. It says he was short, and some people think it means Zacchaeus was a wee little man, but actually, it might mean Jesus was a wee little man.
I don't think that it does.
It's possible.
Pretty sure it's not.
It says Zacchaeus climbed the tree because he was short and he couldn't see Jesus. So yeah. And it doesn't mean
we'll do a little bit of investigating the Greek New Testament, because I'm pretty sure that if we remember our case endings, Matt, we'll be able to discover who it's referring to.
All right, so just look into that. So Jesus might have been
Did
hobbit-sized.
Did you just come up with that all by yourself?
He might have been hobbit-sized.
Nope.
All right. What number are we on?
Would be shocked if that was accurate. Number 3. I'm going to put here Frodo's general torment that he goes through, which is very much kind of like the stages of the cross. You know, where Frodo is slowly and slowly kind of loses his, not humanity, but whatever the equivalent is for hobbits. He loses his humanity and he's tortured and he's tormented on the way to Mount Doom. And eventually the torment is so much that he actually has to leave the world. Very similar to how Jesus is tormented and tortured. And then after that ordeal stays for a little while, but then goes away in the ascension.
Very good. Very good.
What's your number 3, Matt?
I put that Frodo was resolute in the same way Jesus was. For example, they both knew what their purpose was, but both of them didn't necessarily want that. We see Jesus in the garden praying for the cup to pass. In a sense, Frodo didn't really want to have to deal with what was happening, but he was going to do it because he knew that's what had to get done.
Yeah, very true. The Bible talks about it. Jesus sets his face like a flint. And Frodo very much does the same thing. He does not waver from the path.
You know what? Never mind. We'll talk about this later. Well, no, I'm going to talk about it now.
Okay.
So in class on Thursday, we were talking about how Jesus had talked about this baptism.
And this class is biblical theology.
Biblical theology. Yeah. There was going to be a baptism of judgment that was going to come on him when he sacrificed himself on the cross. And so sometimes in the past, when I had read the story about, when he's asking for the cup to pass so he didn't have to go through what was about to happen, I had thought, well, of course, no one wants to be crucified. That would suck. Painful, all that stuff. But really what he was actually getting at, as I mean, I've heard this before, but it's just interesting to point out that he wanted the cup to pass of this extreme judgment that he was going to bear for the world.
Yeah.
Jesus is pretty nice.
He's a swell dude. I like him. We approve of Jesus on the Sci-Fi Christian.
All right, Ben, 4.
2. Since
number
we were counting
two.
Down.
Number 2.
All right, I have another excerpt to read here from the book. And this was one of the things that in the movies I really did not care for the way they changed it. Do you remember the scene where they go across the ford and Arwen and takes Frodo and the Nazgul are chasing them? And then she calls the flood in the river and the Nazgul are ripped away?
Yeah.
Completely different in the book.
Yep, you told me about this, but go ahead and tell the audience.
The end result is the same in that the Nazgul get swept away, but actually in the book, it's not Arwen who shows up, it's an elf named Glorfindel, and Glorfindel puts Frodo on his horse and sends him across the ford. And then this happens. Frodo heard the splash of water, it foamed about his feet. He felt the quick heave and surge as the horse left the river and struggled up the stony path. He was climbing the steep bank, he was across the ford. But the pursuers were close behind. At the top of the bank, the horse halted and turned, about neighing fiercely. There were 9 riders at the water's edge below, and Frodo's spirit quailed before the threat of their uplifted faces. He knew of nothing that would prevent them from crossing as easily as he had done, and he felt that it was useless to try and escape over the long, uncertain path from the ford to the edge of Rivendell, if once the river's riders crossed. In any case, he felt that he was commanded urgently to halt. Hatred again stirred in him, but he had no longer the strength to refuse. Suddenly, the foremost rider spurred his horse forward. It checked at the water and reared up. With a great effort, Frodo sat upright and brandished his sword. "Go back," he cried. "Go back to the land of Mordor and follow me no more." His voice sounded thin and shrill in his own ears. The riders halted, but Frodo had not the power of Bombadil. His enemies laughed at him with harsh and chilling laughter. Come back, they called. To Mordor we will take you. Go back, he whispered. The ring," they cried with deadly voices, and immediately their leader urged his horse forward into the water, followed closely by two others. "By Elbereth and Luthien the Fair," said Frodo with a lasting effort, lifting up his sword, "you shall have neither the ring nor me." Then the leader, who was now half across the ford, stood up menacing in his stirrups and raised up his hand. Frodo was stricken dumb. He felt his tongue cleave to his mouth and his heart laboring. His sword broke and fell out of his shaking hand. The elf horse reared and snorted. The foremost of the riders had almost set foot upon the shore. At that moment there came a roaring and a rushing, a noise of loud waters rolling many stones. Dimly Frodo saw the river below him rise, and down along its course there came a plumed cavalry of waves. White flames seemed to Frodo to flicker on their crests, and he half fancied that he saw amid the water white riders upon white horses with frothing manes. The three riders that were still in the midst of the ford were overwhelmed. They disappeared, buried suddenly under angry foam. Those that were behind drew back in dismay. With his last failing senses, Frodo heard cries, and it seemed to him that he saw, beyond the riders that hesitated on the shore, a shining figure of white light, and behind it ran small, shadowy forms waving flames that flared red in the gray mist that was falling over the world. The black horses were filled with madness, and leaping forward in terror, they bore their riders into the rushing flood. Their piercing cries were drowned in the roaring of the river as it carried them away, and then Frodo felt himself falling, and the roaring and confusion seemed to rise and engulf him together with his enemies, and he heard and saw no more. That is awesome.
Nicely done with your reading.
Thank you, sir.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, Frodo stands against the darkness, and it's one of the great moments where we really see him do that. I mean, we see him do it in a sense throughout the entire series, but here it's really, really tangible in the sense that he is taking a stand against the darkness. He raises his sword, and to the very last of his strength, he's going to fight the riders and refuse them their prize and defend humanity and the world and everything else that he's called to do. I was really, really disappointed by how they did this in the movie, because you lose all of that. Frodo's just kind of out of it on the horse.
Yeah. So was this your biggest disappointment?
Definitely. Hands down, of all the things they changed, this is the one that bothers me the most.
Wow.
And if they had Arwen there, but just still did the scene the same way, yeah, where it's Frodo who goes across by himself and where he makes his stand against the riders, that would have been cool. Mm-hmm. But the way they did it in the movie just did not work for me one bit. Mm-hmm. And they ruined what was really a great, great scene.
A little spiritual warfare action happening there.
Definitely.
Nice.
You're number two, sir.
Number two, I thought was really interesting in the movie when they showed the scene of man having the chance, being right there at Mount Doom, being able to throw the ring over the edge, and man falls.
Yeah.
Fails in his task. So I see Frodo as a person who helped restore the world after man's error or man's fall.
Very good. So he does what could not be done before, though he kind of fails at the end too.
Yeah. But it's a thought that counts.
Don't worry, Jesus. It's a thought that counts. Yeah.
Okay, number one.
This would actually have been my number two. Yeah. My number one was Frodo just burying the ring. But number two, sparing Gollum and the mercy that he showed.
I have that as a runner-up. Forgiving of Gollum.
I think it's bigger than a runner-up, because I think that this is huge. Because if it wasn't for Gollum, nothing would have turned out right. Mm-hmm. Gollum needed to be there. And so Frodo choosing to show grace and mercy to someone who does not deserve it. What's more messianic than that?
Maybe I should make that my number one, because now that I'm looking at what I have, this would not have been my number one, because as I said before, carrying the burden of the world was my number one.
Yeah.
I have this note that says, life giver, hope giver. I mean, that might tie into some of the stuff we've already talked about, in the sense that his actions led to life being able to go on for Middle Earth, whereas if Sauron had taken power, there would have just been death and darkness.
Definitely.
So, I guess that would... Yeah, I like both those. Forgiving of Gollum, and he's a life giver, a hope giver. I also had one runner-up. Do you have any runner-up?
I don't have any. I forgot to do runner-up this week.
I made this a runner-up because it wasn't an official resurrection, but he did kind of fake die a couple times.
So, kind of like what you just did a bit ago.
Exactly.
You were a bit messianic there.
You think so?
No.
No.
I don't think choking on your water and drooling all over my floor is messianic in even the slightest bit.
All right. Well, so that's our list.
All right. Great. Great list, Matt. Well done.
You too.
Should we get to some listener feedback?
I guess. That's what happens next.
Apparently when we have off days, though, we have shorter shows.
Not again. I thought you said you'd fix this.
I did.
All right.
It's messed up.
That's all right. They still like it.
Yeah.
So, listener feedback. I have an email, actually, that you do not have.
Yeah, because you just wrote it.
No. It's not from me, I promise.
Oh. Okay, yeah. Do you want to start with that? I have a great call from... Well, how about we play Doug's call first, because he talks about Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
So let's start with that, since we just had that topic.
Fresh in our minds.
And then we will move on to your email.
All right.
Hey, fellas. This is Doug in Atlanta. Calling about your Lord of the Rings episode. I'm just getting into it here. It's on the drive home, and just listening to your description of what was going on. And you came to the part where you talked about Sam being like the best sidekick ever. And I have to agree incredibly. I mean, he was just the best friend Frodo could possibly have ever had. Let me tell you something about how I reacted to it. In the movie Return of the King, Frodo is rescued after, you know, the ring has been destroyed. The eagles bring him away. And he wakes up in Elrond's place in the big bed. And as he is, you know, regaining consciousness, Merry and Pippin, oh, they're just all running in, and everybody's so happy, and they're bouncing on the bed and glad to see that he's okay. But then, and there's no audio during all of this, but then Sam just kind of takes a couple of steps into the, you know, the doorway, and he and Frodo just share a glance that just says everything, you know, that we've been through it all. We don't, you know, we have a bond that nobody else really has. And they just, it's just a knowing glance. And I tell you, I have never cried in a movie, but that one scene there when Sam walks in the door, my chest started heaving. I had to be careful there. I didn't make too much noise, but that really hit me. That was the one big moment, big emotional moment in the movie, and it was just a look. And I think that, too, is really why Frodo later on says that when he gets back to the Shire, it's just not the same for him. It's not so much that the ring has corrupted him. It's just that he has seen so much and so much evil and has experienced to the point that these other hobbits that are just having a good old time and raising a glass of ale in the... Green Dragon, he just doesn't feel that anymore. It just doesn't seem right, given what he has gone through, not just what he's seen, but what he has personally experienced. So I think that is, the big reason why Frodo just doesn't feel he belongs in the world anymore. It's just not the same to him, and it's just not as carefree as it used to be. So anyway, just some thoughts. I may call back later with some more. Who knows? Good job with your looking over the Lord of the Rings.
Well, Doug, I hope you do call back with some more because you've always got great stuff to say, and that was no exception.
That was definitely great. I did notice what he talked about, but I liked how he read into it because it's completely true. They can just look at each other and say, we've been through it all together.
Yep, that's one of the coolest little moments at the end there is when they're in the Green Dragon.
Yeah, definitely.
They're the ones who understand everything, and everyone else is kind of just ignorant little hobbits who don't get everything else they've gone through.
So why do you think then, you know, we see what happens with Frodo at the end where he can't live in that world anymore and he moves on, but Sam does, he is able to move or to live in the Shire. Where is that difference?
Well, for Frodo, it was so much more traumatic for him. He was actually bearing the ring.
Yeah.
And so everything he experienced was, you know, a thousandfold worse than what everyone else has experienced because he was going through this unspeakable torment the whole way.
That's true.
So I think that for all of them, they're definitely changed where they can't just resume normal life. Mm-hmm. But for Frodo especially, it's way too much torment for him. Yeah. What's your email that you have, Matt?
Well, I've got an email from Scott Wilson. And this is about our comics continuity podcast. Guys.
Oh, the one with Dave?
Yep, with Dave. He actually sent this message to both me and Dave.
Oh.
Guys, hey, I just had...
Scott, what's the deal, man?
Well, it was through Facebook. So it's not technically an email. It's a Facebook message.
Gotcha. Because
we were all discussing something on a wall. On a wall. On Facebook wall.
Okay. I think we all understand probably what you mean.
Yeah. So here we go. Guys, I just had a chance to listen to your podcast on comics continuity, and it was fantastic. Great job. I had a very enjoyable time listening to your comments and recommendations on how you would improve today's comics. I was making some notes on some of what you discussed, but the action was so fast I couldn't keep up with what I was writing down. Some of what I picked up, and then he lists a bunch of stuff, and I chose two things that I thought I'd read here real quick. He says, DC has a win-win situation with this new relaunch. If it is popular and maintains high sales, then it will stay for a while. If not, yet another crisis event will happen. I give it 2 years max. What do you think of that, Ben?
Yeah, I don't see that as being a win, though, if they have to do that. You know, because they're hyping everybody up for a relaunch, and if it fails, that's not a win for DC.
Maybe it wouldn't be an overall win, but it wouldn't be a tremendous loss in the sense that they have this precedent of doing crisis events, so yeah, but they could always go back to
they've
that.
They've pissed off all their old fans now by doing the reboot in the first place, and so they are really, really trying their fans' patience for their loyal readers. I think that if DC has to backpedal on this, which I agree with him that they will,
yeah,
it's going to be a huge defeat for them.
I can see what you're saying. I think that it's true, though, that because of the crisis events, they could always just take things back the way it was.
Oh, yeah, and that's what they'll do, but I don't see that as a win.
We talked about Brad Meltzler.
Yeah.
He also wrote a new Justice League of America series, staying on for 13 issues, which sounds good. I'd like to check that out. And he mentioned the show that he's on that he says he loves called Decoded. Have you seen Decoded?
Nope.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I would like to watch it.
Very nice.
All right. And he said he wrote a bunch of other stuff. Thanks for everything you wrote, Scott. I will not read everything now, but it was good.
Okay. Do you want to read your email that you had written while we were recording?
I didn't really write anything. Oh, I'll just tell you what I read. So I was at Borders yesterday.
Yeah.
Checked out two new, I don't know how new they are, but relatively new graphic novels.
Yeah. Checked out.
By checked out, I meant sat in their chair and read.
Oh, okay.
And so one was called iZombie. And you've heard of this,
Ben. I have heard of it.
And pretty interesting story. I'm going to minorly... I won't spoil anything. Never mind. It's just good.
Great review, bro.
I'll tell a review without spoiling it. So it sets up. It has different supernatural characters in it.
Like zombies?
And maybe more than zombies. But it actually gives... A grounded reason why such things as zombies, vampires, ghosts might exist. So it's pretty interesting.
I will have to check it out.
Yeah. And then lastly, I read Morning Glories, which after I finished iZombie, I was like, oh my gosh, this was awesome. And then I read Morning Glories, and this one blew me away. It was amazing. It's probably the best graphic novel I've read recently after Fables.
Okay.
So
better than Walking Dead?
For me, yeah, by far. So this was actually recommended to me by Damon Lindelof personally.
It was not recommended to you personally by Damon Lindelof.
What are you talking about? How?
Yeah, maybe in your delusional lost theme fantasy.
He tweeted about it, and I follow him.
Uh-huh. That was not a personal recommendation to you.
And so he tweeted about this. So here's the setup for Morning Glories. Six teenagers, I think they're about 16, are all selected to be a part of the school, Morning Glory Academy, and they're doing... they kind of have a special way of doing education, and there's hints that possibly these kids are more than they meets the eye, much like Transformers.
Hopefully it's not too much like Transformers.
Right. And so there's a reason why these specific kids were selected, and I don't want to give away too much, but there is mystery. It seems to me, Ben, that just like Lost had an end game in mind, that Morning Glories has an end game in mind, they're putting down just tiny little hints that we know have to go someplace. Like even the very first page of the entire volume that I read, they never come back to it. They kind of set up a little tiny story. We don't know who the characters are that are talking. They never come back to it in volume one. So it's a mystery that obviously they're going to be working up towards. So there's other things like that all along. These little tiny seeds of information that will one day bloom into a beautiful tapestry of storytelling.
That sounds good to me. I will definitely check it out.
I loved it. And it's really affordable. Only $10, and it's thick when it comes to graphic novels.
Nice. So more than six issues?
It's six issues, but the first issue is at least double-sized at minimum.
So probably in the future, they'll all be about the normal size. But
yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
So great. I loved
definitely read it. All right, Matt. We have an email here from Colin. As usual, writes in about our feud last week. Hi, Matt and Ben. Well, I have to admit that I enjoyed the debate you all partook in. It was the most pleasant, well-natured debate I've ever listened to. Probably because Scott and Miles knew we were right, and so they just more or less gave in.
It might have been the Christian fellowship that we were all partaking in.
Or that. In fact, the only time it got a bit heated was when Miles' Star Trek cage got rattled. I don't remember this.
It's when I said...
You've listened to it 27 times.
So it's when I said, at least it's not as bad as Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. It was also intriguing listening to the two different podcasts take on the debate, which I personally feel was a draw.
Oh, he's saying that... Did we announce already that we thought we won? Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, several times. plus the different sound and editing styles on each cast. At least Skype held up. I think both sides made valid points and hypotheses. Well, the adjudication was taking different, I'm not sure what that turns out to, on each podcast, one calling a draw and one a win.
Oh, yeah. He's basically saying...
Yeah, that yeah. They said we drew and we said we won.
Yeah.
So here's how I worked this out.
Hey, he said hypothesis in there. Does he have an email about the sperm hypothesis?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Maybe we're done with that.
Yeah, maybe. Go ahead. What were we going to say?
So... You figure, like, you get a point for a win, 0 points for a loss,
okay.
Half a point for a draw.
Okay.
So, here's how I work it out. I'm going to write it down here on the idea board.
All right, let me hear it.
According to the Sci-Fi Diner, so I'm going to write SFC and SD. According to them, we both...
Why don't they get an F?
Because I don't. So, according to them, we each got half a point.
Okay.
In the feud. According to us... We got 1 point for our victory and 0 for them for our loss.
Okay, which brings the total to...
Total score to Sci-Fi Christian, 1.5.
Uh-huh.
Sci-Fi Diner,
0.5.
We dominated.
So, I mean...
It's right here on the scoreboard.
It wasn't a shutout, but it was...
It wasn't a shutout. You know, we can give them a couple good points here and there. They got half a point.
Yeah, pretty clear victory.
But, yeah, I mean, it doesn't... We had 3 times their score.
You know what would be a good debate? If they like Superman, they could tell us why they like Superman.
Yeah.
And we could tell them why Superman sucks.
Superman does suck.
Okay.
Now that I will stand by.
Yeah.
And that, I've watched the original movie and that is terrible.
Well, not just the movie. We have to talk about his whole
and the character. Yeah. So okay. You heard it there here first. No hyperbole here. Superman sucks.
Okay.
Yeah. So. That one I will stand by.
I probably don't feel as strongly about that as you, but I don't like him as a character.
But we can start a feud though for fun.
I like that he flies.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I guess he's boring, one-dimensional, and lame.
I do like his logo.
Like the giant S?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of like super. Like
I don't think it's kind of like super. I'm pretty sure that's what it actually stands for.
You know, Shaquille O'Neal actually has that tattooed on his arm by his bicep, and I always thought that'd be cool if I got a tattoo to get...
right on your chest?
Well, I would put on my bicep.
Oh. I think it works if you have really big biceps.
Yeah. Yeah, probably better. I mean, it'd be... Bigger anyways.
Maybe I don't know.
On your shoulder blade?
Yeah. I don't know if that would be the best tattoo for you to get.
Yeah. So we'll come back to that.
All right, Matt. Anything else before we wrap it up today?
That's it?
That's it. We had a short show today.
Wow. All right. Well, I mean, I had a near-death experience, so I'm ready to end this.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a hard moment for me, but I guess that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBono.
And we're the Sci-Fi Christians. Signing off.